Okay, my name is Gary Gramlin, and I'm called to order regularly scheduled board meeting for the month of February, which happens to be February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. If you haven't purchased something appropriate for your partner, as soon as this board meeting is over, you'll have plenty of time. Let's see, I've got to go through all these instructions here. First of all, I'll announce that we do have a quorum. There are four of us present. The other, Bobby Spoon, is on safari, and I forget this week if it's Kenya or where, but she's doing that. And Ben and Jim Waring, Ben Moran and Jim Waring, checked in and excused for this morning. So, members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must fill out a speaker request form. Speakers normally are limited to 3 minutes each. Collective testimony by those who support or oppose an item shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes total per side. The public may ask for an item to be pulled from the consent agenda by submitting a speaker request form. Comments on non-agenda items are heard at the beginning of each meeting. Please fill out a white-colored speaker's request form if you wish to speak on a non-agenda item that is related to the business that we normally conduct here at the Housing Commission. To speak on a matter listed on the agenda, please complete a speaker request form and submit it to Angie over here in the corner. That's not her last name, but her word. If you intend to speak in opposition to the item, please fill out a pink-colored form. If you plan to speak in support, fill out a gold-colored form. Having covered that, I'll look. It does not appear as if we've had a request for public comment, so we'll move on beyond that. Commissioner comments. I'm actually going to start the commissioner comments by announcing that effective after this meeting, essentially, we have two new board members who will be coming on for the March meeting. They are present, sitting in the front row. They are resident commissioners, meaning that we're going to say goodbye today to two resident commissioners, Alan and Kadisha. And then next month we'll have our two new ones, Maggie Davis and Keely Hubbard. Would you both please stand just so that everyone can see you? They're here today to observe and probably write a critique, and next month we'll have to change everything. So it's somewhat poignant that we're losing our current two resident commissioners. One reason for that is that Commissioner Basir is the only commissioner on the board at this time who has more seniority than I do. She was here when I got here, and for a while it looked as if she might be here after I left. So. Okay, any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Sims?
I think congratulations are in order. Gary Gramling and Roberta Spoon were reelected for another 3 years as commissioners. So, bravito.
That's what I meant by I thought for a loss. Kadisha may have continued seniority since I might not be here. Yeah, it was nice to have that confidence placed in both Roberta and myself by the City Council. So we look forward to serving you and the city. Seeing no indication of additional commissioner comments, I'll call now for the report by President, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Gentry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got three or four positive reports to give to the board. First of all, I want to add my thank you to Commissioners Basir and Sims. Both have been very wonderful to deal with. I'll point out that K Kadesha is the only remaining board member who was here when I was hired, so you're still to blame. And thank you for bringing me here. I very much appreciate it. Going to miss both of you. So welcome all, also to the new board members, Keely and Maggie. We're going to have fun. But thank you for being willing to serve. A report from last week. Last week, I spent 3 days in Washington, D.C., at a, quote, move-in-to-work conference. And this is timely because we're going to be having an MTW workshop for the board this morning for our annual MTW plan that will come to you all for action next month. And as you may remember, move-in-to-work is an innovative program that was started in the late 1990s. The name is reflective of its genesis. It was part of the welfare reform movement that was in the fore in the mid to late 1990s. There are 39 housing agencies across the country out of a total of over 3,000 who are privileged enough to participate in this program. It is a program that it does not deregulate us. However, it gives us a lot of latitude. And what it means is that rather than being stuck following some of the dumber of the federal rules and regulations, and there are a lot of them, we're allowed to submit an annual plan to HUD every year that runs from July 1 to June 30, consistent with our fiscal year, which allows us flexibility and latitude under the federal program. The Movement to Work Conference is the second of this group of agencies. And we were successful in getting a verbal commitment to extend that program from HUD Secretary Donovan. As you all may well remember, this is a program scheduled to sunset in 2018 after 20 years of existence. And the HUD Secretary indicated to us through an assistant secretary last week that he was going to exercise his authority under the law and to extend the program another 10 years. So although 2018 sounds far away, much less 2028, they are not. So this will give us a lot of time for planning for that time period. And as far as I'm concerned, it makes the program permanent. And it is the same. And there's not a lot of about this program at the federal level that is the same. And my thanks to the staff for making this program a very successful one here since we initiated it. Reinitiated it in 2009. So you'll hear that report later in the day. Also, as you may have noted, the Congress and the administration was able to come together for a two-year budget in December, which has been appropriations then have flowed from that since the board meeting in January. And we don't know the exact numbers coming to us yet for our larger programs. And as you remember, our Housing Choice Voucher program is the largest of our programs by far, where we house some 14,500 families with that program. But when federal sequestration hit us a year ago, we lost some $7.5 million and 723 vouchers. We were looking at if there was a sequestration too, it would have been a cut that deeper. With the budget the way it is, there's a smart aleck comment in the government now that flat is the new up. That being the case, we're up. So at least we won't lose any money. We could see an increase of 1, 2, maybe 3%. And that in today's climate is a major success. We will have a budget workshop for you all next month, either next month or April, and then with the budget for a fiscal year 15 to follow a month or so after that, we'll have that to you in either April or May, depending on some factors. And I'm much more optimistic about that now than I was, say, a couple of months or so ago. On January the 8th, the Standard & Poor's Rating Service, S&P, reaffirmed the Housing Commission's AA credit rating. And this is the second highest rating that they give, and it's the highest that they give to the housing agencies. And the reason we don't get the highest is because of our dependence on federal funding. Not hard to figure that one out. And it reflects, in their words, a very strong capacity to meet financial commitments. And I think this is a great affirmation of the great teamwork by this board, the Housing Authority, City Council, our management staff, and our partners, which help us to provide affordable housing in an extremely strong and competent way. And again, my thank you to this board for the way you set policies, and my thank you to the staff for the way you all execute those policies. I think this is a good reflection of the agency. And also, on February the 25th, there's going to be a grand opening at the Fairbanks Commons. And as you may well remember, this is a 163 units in an affordable community in Black Mountain Ranch. This is for very low and low-income families. And this will be property affordable to families earning up to 60% of the San Diego area median income, which is approximately $47,000 a year for a family of four. This property will remain affordable for 55 years. And this reflects the Housing Commission's partnership with Chelsea Investment Corporation and Pacific Southwest Community Development Corporation. We authorized the issuance of almost $36 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds to help fund this new construction, which represents about 70% of the estimated total development cost of $51 million. What is particularly notable about this property is it also reflects the intent by policy of this organization to try to disperse the properties that we're involved in throughout the city, particularly above Interstate 8. And Mr. Chairman, with that concludes my report.
Thank you. And just to underscore one thing here, combining two points that Rick made during his comments. As a moving to work agency, we were not impacted by the sequester to the same extent that those other 3,000 plus units were, or agencies were around the country. And while the sequester caused us some disruption and some angst, there were some agencies that literally were on the verge of collapsing because they didn't have the freedoms that moving to the designation gives us. So it was just a very positive thing. And last year in March, when we were at the legislative conference in Washington, D.C., we were talking to the legislators and talking to them about the very fact that moving to work did cause some differences. And one of the things that even there were several of the moving to work agencies there, and we were all talking to the legislators about the fact that they needed to really do something to help those other agencies so that they would not collapse. So very important. Next, I'm going to take care of two ceremonial items here, and then we'll get back to our primary agenda. So with your patience, I'm going to come around to the front here.
So, because of the fact that we're losing two of our board members, we're going to recognize their service with a small token of my appreciation, and then we're going to demand that they come back and sit down and continue working with us. That's just the kind of people we are. So, first, Kadisha. So you're the one with the seniority, and you've been that smile has been present all the time,
and you've always been a great friend, and you've challenged when you needed to challenge us. So your service has been really a value to the city, to the commission, and a great value to me. So I thank you very, very much. So, what we have here is something that works really good as a paperweight. I don't know what you would call this shape. But as I said, it's just a token of the appreciation which we hold you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Modern cameras, you don't realize when he shot him. He says, one more, and I was waiting for him to take the first one.
I just wanted to say a few words to the chairman, of course, to the CEO, Rick, and to the other members of the Housing Commission. I just wanted to say thank you, and it has been a pleasure serving as the Housing Commissioner for this company.
Sims. Now, I'm not sure I'm going to give you a hug. Oh. Yeah. Well, I know, but I'm not sure I'm going to enjoy it nearly as much as I do. Alan came onto the board just shortly after I did, and has really thrown his heart into being a good commissioner. And both of them took some many assignments, especially on the investment committee, to help us use our assets or preserve our assets carefully. Alan has been able to attend several of the conferences around the country, and he is like a sponge. His mind is always trying to grab for more information, more details, and then he brings back the results of those conferences and shares them with the board. So you've been a valuable contributor, and you'll be missed. I say that in that manner because I still remember one time we were in Texas waiting for a plane to change. And I used plane travel as an opportunity to catch up on reading, and he had already done all of his reading while we were in the airport. So he used the opportunity to make sure I didn't catch up with him. I've teased him a lot over the years, but I've truly enjoyed your company, your presence, and your assistance in looking after this board, looking after our city's assets. So, thank you. Okay, very good. Come back to visit anytime you want. We'll always have free coffee.
Good morning and happy Valentine's Day. You know, it's a day of love, and I think we all need more of that. Getting to the serious business, you know, this being a commissioner has been a true blessing. And it would not have happened if it had not been to new people. It just would not have happened. So thank you to you all for all the efforts that you put into some of the ideas that we have. The city of San Diego has truly benefited through these services, and I see future commissioners continuing this on down this path, and it's just such a wonderful adventure. Just want to make a few thanks to our people in the audience, Jeff Davis and his group, who have done a fabulous job, and to the investment committee, Kevin and Joe, who is the investment advisor. It was truly an adventure being on that committee, and it was such a learning experience. Wow. So anyway, I want to thank them both too.
and then to our guiding light, and a person who has led this agency to a higher level, Rick Gentry, and also to counsel for his office and his help, giving advice and counsel, and to Angie, who has always been there to help the commissioners when they're needed in an administrative way. Without her, it just would not have worked either. So, and then thanks to Patricia, and to Frank, and of course Gary, Spoon, and Frank, let's see who else, Ben and Jim. And they've been wonderful. So, in closing, I just wanted to let you know that new doors have already opened, and it's time to move on. And it's been such a wonderful, wonderful experience. So, just love, kudos, and blessings to you all. Thank you.
Walker, I can't sneak up on anything.
Next on our agenda is the time to approve the minutes of the regular meeting on January 17th, 2014. Had a chance to look at them. Is there a need to make any changes or corrections? It's been moved approval by Commissioner Hutchison, seconded by Commissioner Basir. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the minutes as they were presented, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carried unanimously. Now I'd like to propose a consent agenda. I propose moving items 101 and 102 to the consent agenda. Any disagreement with that? If not, Commissioner Sims?
I have one question I'd like to ask on item 101, please.
Go ahead.
Is there a representative here?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning, Trevor Abney, Director of Construction Services.
Good morning. Just wanted to know, on the new security service, is there going to be on-job training, either on-site or off-site, for reviews, powers of arrest, emergency procedures, et cetera, et cetera?
Sorry, that's a great question. There's actually a tremendous amount of training that occurs both prior to the contract starting and after the contract starts as well. And it will be ongoing and continual. And the contractor has demonstrated quite substantially the amount of training that they put their staff through. So we're very happy with that.
So we're going to have confidence in that requirement of being fulfilled.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If there are no other questions on it, was there a motion to set the consent agenda?
So moved.
It's been moved by Commissioner Hutchison.
Second.
Commissioner Sims has seconded the motion. All in favor of the consent agenda, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Consent agenda is approved. Next is item 100, preliminary items pursuant to issuing multifamily housing revenue bonds for Westminster Manor.
Good morning, Chair Granlund, Commissioners. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Item 100 is a bond issuance, and as our CEO, Mr. Gentry, mentioned, Chelsea Investment Company is going to have a grand opening for Fairbanks Commons. This project has similarities to that project in that Chelsea investment company as the development partner, and it is a straight bond issue. So I just wanted to make a couple of points. First and foremost is that, and the most important is that this is a preservation action. Your approvals of this item and the bond financing will preserve 153 units of housing and extend the affordability for 55 years. The other key point is it is a straight bond issue. Our only involvement is as a bond issuer for the Housing Authority of the City of San Diego, which means that we don't have any financial involvement in the project, no loan. With that, Tim Miyahara will provide you with a presentation on the action.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Item 100 is a preliminary multifamily housing revenue bond issuance for $28.5 million. Westminster Manor is a 153-unit acquisition, rehabilitation, preservation project located in the Bakersfield neighborhood of the Uptown Community Plan area. The 16-story high-rise consists of 91 studios and 62 one-bedroom units. The project was originally financed with a HUD 202 direct mortgage loan. 121 units currently receive Section 8 housing assistance payments from HUD. The existing HAP agreements are set to expire in May and June of 2014, and the developer has applied for HUD for a new 20-year HAP agreement. The proposed bond financing will preserve the affordable units for an additional 55-year term. Under the proposed bond financing, 10% of the units will be restricted to 50% of the area median income, and the remaining units will be restricted to 60% of the area median income. The project has not been substantially rehabbed since it was built in 1972. Major building improvements include installation of fire sprinklers, roof replacement, new windows, new central boiler system, kitchen and bath replacement, and electrical and plumbing upgrades. The development is within a quarter-mile radius of a bus stop, Balboa Park, a senior community center, and St. Paul's Pace. Westminster Manor Limited Partnership will be the owner of the project and will consist of Westminster Manor of San Diego, Chelsea Investment Corporation, and a tax credit investor. Westminster Manor of San Diego is the original developer and current owner of the project. Chelsea Investment Corporation was selected from an RFP solicitation to rehab the project. Chelsea is financing the bulk to over 6,500 units of affordable housing. In addition to the housing revenue bonds, the development will be financed with 4% tax credit equity, an $18 million seller note, loan interest, developer equity contribution, and existing project reserves. No Housing Commission funding is requested. The issuance of bonds will not create a financial liability to the Housing Commission, Housing Authority, or City. Any bonds issued will be repaid from project revenues, and the developer is responsible for paying all costs of issuing the bonds. The Housing Commission will receive a $70,000 bond issuer fee and an annual $21,000 fee. Staff recommendations to the board include: recommend that the Housing Authority approve a bond inducement resolution and application to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee. Recommend that City Council hold a TEFRA public hearing. Approve Squire Sanders as bond counsel and CSG Advisors as financial advisor. And authorize the executive director of the Housing Authority or designate to execute all necessary documents to implement these approvals. That concludes our presentation.
Commissioner Sims?
When we do the redevelopment, is this going to be cost-effective using the green criteria on what they're going to be doing on sprinkler systems and screens?
Tim Baker from Chelsea is here. You should be able to answer those questions.
Good morning, Commissioner. Tim Baker at Chelsea. Yes. Tim Baker at Chelsea. Yes, we'll be following the green code. Under the state code in terms of that getting green. We're also exceeding energy standards, the current basis of energy standards for the project by 20%, which is a new roof. Right now the whole systems are 1972 systems, so new boiler, new windows, new heating systems, everything's going to be upgraded to a modern spec standard, if you will.
Will this include elevators?
There's two elevators. They were upgraded 4 years ago. Yeah, 4 years ago. So it's actually, the building itself is good bones. If you you will. And one upgrade that's really taken place is the elevators. Everything else is pretty much, you walk into the building and you're saying you're looking at 1972 standards, if you will.
And is there going to be upgrading on the security system there?
Yes. That's one of the major items, including probably having on-site security for a period of time. But the only system they have right now is a fob system for the entryway. We're going to be putting fobs throughout. The fobs are the little keychain items that you wave in front of the door. So we'll be having those throughout the complex, as well as security cameras. If you're familiar with our Mercado project, that project has about 40 video cameras and a fob system to get in, a fob system to get in the elevator, a fob system to use the elevator. So we're pretty much using that same type of spec for Westminster Manor. We walked the board of Westminster Manor walked with me about a month or two ago, and we pretty much highlighted the whole system. So we're pretty much going to be including that type of standard into Westminster Manor.
And the last question, is there going to be any space designated for the mentally ill?
There won't be a specific designation because in terms of fair housing policy, but the project is 55 and older, as well as for disability. And that disability category includes a number of categories, if you will. I would say in generalities, the demographic there in some ways falls in that question falls into the demographic that we're dealing with there for downtown. This is not what we're doing Fairbanks Square, a senior project next door to Fairbanks Commons. That senior demographic in North County and in that area is somewhat different than this demographic that has been mapped in downtown. I would say a fair amount of people that are Westminster Manor, those households, if they weren't at Westminster Manor, most likely they'd be in a shelter or living on the street. So with that population comes those similar issues.
Commissioner Brassier, you might want to stick around in case
I have to stay where everybody is.
Good morning. I had a question regarding the relocation of the 11 tenants that will be permanently relocated. Where will they be actually relocated to, and will their needs be met?
Great question. One of the number of logistic issues that we're dealing with on this project. That number, since I've been working with Ted, that number actually has been lowered to either 3 to 4 households. It was at 11 because at the time that we submitted information for the staff report, TCAC was the tax credit allocation committee was uncertain for the new regs if a senior project would be adjusted upward to 62 years old. They came back, the regs came back, the new regs were January 29th, and the regs are that a senior category is 55 and older for 1 year. Next year, they're going to be adjusting it upward to 62. So at the time we worked on the staff report together, I was uncertain about that, so it's actually been lowered. So it's 3 or 4 households. There's one household that will definitively probably be relocated. Two others or three others, because of income, we're not certain yet. So that max will be 4 households. We've hired a relocation consultant, OPC, that's well known throughout the state of California. And we'll be following the relocation laws that are pertinent to that, to those relocation requirements. Typically, that's a differential in rent of 42 months is paid to them, as well as we try to provide them opportunities to find housing in other locales.
And is the relocation taking place now? Because it says the plan is expected to end by the end of this month.
The plan is the plan is being drafted to describe how that's going to take place. The actual relocation will not take place until after the project's funding is closed, which is projected to be in June. So upon that time, the relocation will will occur after June. They've already been, all the residents have been given what's called a general information notice that was given out about 45 days or so ago in terms of a 3-page notice in describing their rights under the law and what may take place. That was given out also in Mandarin, Korean, and Russian, which are the predominant languages of the project, as well as opportunities for translations to other languages, too.
Thank you.
While you're there,
sure.
First of all, you mentioned that it's going to, the rehab is going to conform to California's Green Code. Have you been given a copy of the Housing Commission's energy guidelines and sustainability guidelines?
No, I have not. I assume it's following along with SIDLAC and TCAC's requirements, but we can certainly talk about that further.
Well, I think we need to make sure they get a copy. And in those places where the energy code is lesser than our guidelines, and then our rules require that the upgrade be brought up to our guidelines on that. And actually, I'm not sure since we approved those and since the energy code has changed during the interim since we approved our guidelines, we probably need to review those and make sure where we stand on that. Next item, is this going to be a phased rehab?
Yes, it will be. That's one of the other logistics issues that we're still trying to figure out. The goal is, there's several goals, is to get it done as fast as possible with the full understanding this is a fully occupied project, and we will handle the temporary relocation of these residents to the highest standards. So along with that, we are going to be hiring two concierges that will be specifically working with the residents, our construction team, our relocation consultant, as well as on-site property management. One concierge will specifically dealing with the logistics of the paperwork, documentation, what have you. The other concierge most likely is going to be somebody with a social worker background, because moving anybody, let alone seniors, is stressful. And this concierge, a social worker background, will be there specifically dealing with the health and emotional wellness of these residents in terms of being on site probably about 2 months before we close on the funding, and be there throughout the whole process, all the way through move out on a temporary location as well as back in. What we're looking at right now is either a floor-by-floor move out or possibly a vertical stack move out. We met with the fire department yesterday, actually, and we're going to be meeting with them as well as several other reviewers down at the city in about 2 weeks to figure out how we're going to be staging this. We first had to get plans and then for them to review the plans so they got an idea of what we were actually thinking. Those plans were submitted in December, so we didn't have to be included under the 2013 code. We were included under the 2010 code, and we had our first meeting yesterday. We'll be having a what's called a pre-con full disciplinary review probably in about 2 weeks. So all the reviewers, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, structural, as well as, most importantly, the on-site inspectors. They're as important, if not more important, than the staff people will be part of this meeting to say, okay, the best way from our perspective for you to do this is horizontally or vertically. So that's yet to be determined. So when we come back in front of you in a couple of months, all that will be laid out fully and completely.
Because I'm assuming if we're replacing windows, there's flooring, there's other interior items that are going to be replaced, obviously these current residents can't be sitting there.
There's asbestos, drain pipes are going to be replaced, cabinetry, I mean, it's a gut rehab. Like I said, the bones, it's a poured-in place building, concrete, I mean, structurally it's very sound, but beyond that, everything's pretty much coming out outside. The electrical systems are very good, fuses, the panels will be replaced. Water pipes may or may not be replaced. Drainage systems will be replaced. So people will have to be out anywhere from about 2 to 3 months. And then we throw in the fact that the building's hot in terms of asbestos, 1972 building. So we'll be scraping in some areas and we'll be encapsulating in some other areas.
Yeah. Okay. And the displaced residents, you're going to take care of providing the housing for them.
That's correct. We're looking at a situation where we would move these people to one location in terms of some type of hotel where the meals are provided, 3 meals on a daily basis. I'm not pretty disclosed that yet, but we're under negotiations with the hotel provider. within about 3 or 4 miles where the residents would be moved there all together. They would have the option to go someplace on their own accord that we would cover that, for, i.e. a family or friends, so that would be open to them also. But we're figuring that if we can keep them together, their friends, what have you, provide some services there, keep them together if they so choose. That way the concierge people that we'll be having will be with them also, and they'll be close to relatively close to downtown. That's the goal, at least. There's no doubt that this is going to be stressful on so many different levels for these people, and we're just going to try to do the best we can with the goal that they move back into their units and be highly upgraded in terms of what they're coming back to. Because right now, they don't have services. We'll be doing a community room. We'll be having a library. We're doubling the size of the laundry room. Obviously, security will be greatly improved. The energy efficiency of the building will be greatly improved. The windows, the balconies are single-pane windows. So you can imagine the building's right next to the freeway, let alone the sun. They hear noise. They get a lot of daylight in there. So it's going to be highly improved. It's just getting to that point. It's going to be one of the best grand openings I've ever been to. So just got to get to that point.
Now, currently, you don't have 24-hour-a-day service there, do you?
In terms of security?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or for that matter, someone at a front desk or anything.
There is the property manager has a front desk. It's terms of like a medical office desk that sees the whole lobby. The Westminster Manor, in tandem with the First Presbyterian Church across the street and the St. Paul's, yes, they have security that walks the neighborhood. So that's in tandem. But the residents, I think, are probably the first concern outside of what you're going to be doing, do I get to come back, is an improvement on security. That's, from that standpoint, is probably the key item. And the board's concern, too, is improving security for the building overall.
Now, you mentioned you're going to be replacing the boiler. And replacing it, is there also going to be air conditioning installed, or is that going to continue to be not a feature there?
We're going to be improving the heat systems and the ventilation of the hallways. There's no ventilation in the hallways. But since it's so close to the bay and all that, it's cost prohibitive in terms of cost benefit, in terms of AC. But the heaters, we're bringing new heaters. And really, the ventilation of the hallways, we'll be doing forced air into the hallways. That will greatly improve the air circulation of the building. But it's a wonderful view, and hence wonderful breezes are coming at that building. You have a direct view of the bay. It's incredible views. It's amazing. So, no, we won't be installing air conditioning. Just from a cost standpoint, it just doesn't make sense.
I agree with you. I was just curious. And actually, based on the location of the building, even the views to the east ought to be nice.
Yes, they're snow-capped views, and you can wave to the planes as they pass by.
Right.
We're joking, and we put some advertising on the side of the building to say, you know, when services are for the church, and also land that way, because you're literally, you're between Mr. A's and us. That's the flight path. So it's actually pretty, when you're on the roof and you're seeing the planes come in, it's pretty neat.
And this will be a cool roof that you're going to be installing?
Correct. 1-year warranty, fully newly installed roof. Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any other? You have a question?
A quick one. How difficult was it, and who gave the approval to change the age group from age 55 to 62?
Well, the building itself will be 55. It will remain that way. In TCAC, Tax Credit Allocation Committee, there are new regs that came out for 2013 on January 29th. So they are to be, at least on a competitive application, which is a 9% application, next year that will be going up to 62. And from a policy standpoint, there's a lot of brouhaha about that throughout the whole state, and there's various reasons for that from their standpoint. We just happen to be lucky from a time standpoint that doesn't affect us at all. So that's a non-issue for this building.
Thank you for that information. Thank you.
Mr. Cusson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the cost per square foot on this? The total construction cost is $12 million plus?
Correct. In our pro forma to you, just to give the project cushion, is approximately about $12 million. Right now, we're looking at about $11 million. We've not gone out to bid yet, formal bids, because the plans haven't come out of the city yet. What we have been doing for about the past 6 months is almost every other week, our contractor, Phil Emerson, has been having meetings with subcontractors that will be doing formal bids on the project. And obviously, this is not a 40-line schedule of values. We're looking probably at 12 or 11 lines on the schedule of values. So we've been having meetings on site, walking the project, opening up. We've demoed two units to open up the walls. We've opened up hallway. We opened up the fire pipes in one of the hallways so the subs could get in there and see it. So we have what I call informal bids that I told the contractor and the subs to be conservative. And when you come back to us, either you're at that number or below it. I don't want something above it because it's full disclosure in terms of seeing these units and all that. And obviously, we're carrying, instead of the standard 5% part cost contingency for a new development, we're carrying 10%, which is standard for rehab. But this project's been walked over a number of times and will continue to be walked over. And we're probably going to be getting a formal bid sometime in April. The plans with a formal set of plans going in probably will be mid-March after this pre-con meeting. They've already gone in for one set. So I think the formal bids we should be getting sometime in April.
With your the estimate that you have right now and the contingency added to it, what's your per square foot cost on this?
Well, I don't, from my standpoint in affordable housing, the cost per square foot is not a number per se that I look at. It's more on a per unit basis for a rehab. The number that you have in your performer, we're looking at about $80,000. I think realistically it's going to come somewhere, depending on the discussions with the fire department, probably about $70,000-ish in terms of when you include the 14% for Emerson. In terms of netting out that 14%, we're looking at about $62,000 or so on that basis, and that's non-prevailing wage.
Now, do you have any requirements on Emerson to do local procurement?
Yes. It's the TPAC reg, SIDLAC encourages that, and all our subs are local. I can't think of one that, quite frankly, is outside of this county of San Diego. And with this project and doing so much work up front, we're using subs that we know very well, and pretty much we're getting free work right now, quite frankly, in terms of them walking the site and what have you. So it's one of those projects versus a new development project, which was really straightforward. This is kind of a work of love for some of these development subs, but they're pretty much giving us free work right now in terms of design concepts, design thoughts. This is what I call a different beast in terms of a construction. There's always going to be surprises with rehab. We're trying to minimize that as much as possible and doing a lot of work up front, a lot of work.
I understand that.
Yeah.
That's on the labor side. What about the materials?
You know, really, the materials, there's not that much materials. There's the cabinetry, flooring, things like that, you know, the boilers. But really, it's, you know, the roof is a new material, but it's really, we're taking asbestos, the new roof, carpentry. It's all local in terms of the subs being local. Where the materials come from, perfectly, I'm not sure where cabinetry is made locally. Carpet, the roof, I'm not sure.
And question the staff, how did you select CSG advisors, financial advisors?
We select the financial advisor and bond counsel on a rotating basis. So currently we have 3 financial advisors and 5 bond counsels. And so we look at what they've been assigned to recently, and then we kind of select who hasn't worked on a recent deal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any additional questions? Okay, we have a recommendation here. What's your wish?
Recommend that we approve item 100.
I'll take that as a motion.
Yes.
It's been moved approval. Commissioner Basir has seconded the motion that was presented by Commissioner Sells. Any additional discussion?
Seeing no indication of such, I'll call for the question. All in favor of approving the recommendation as presented by staff, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chelsea. Okay, item 103, proposed fiscal year budget revision, home investment partnerships.
Good morning, Ann Kern, Senior Director of Rental Housing Finance. With me is Vicki Moss, our housing manager over our home ownership department and our loan servicing department. This item before you this morning proposes an increase to our homeownership activity that would result in creating additional opportunities for home buyers at or below 80% of air median income. Vicki Moss will give you an overview of the action.
Good morning. We are requesting Housing Commission approve revisions to our fiscal year 14 budget to add $1.7 million in home investment partnership program income funds to home ownership. $1,530,000 of the funds will be used for loans and grants under our first-time home buyer program, and $170,000 for administration. Buyer participation in our first-time home buyer program is extremely strong. Since July 2013, the Housing Commission has helped a total of 84 eligible home buyers purchase a home. We have funded 38 loans and 35 grants using the home funds that we have in this year's budget, totaling over $2.1 million, and we have four loans pending that will use the remaining home funds. With the addition of the requested home program funds, approximately 26 additional low-income buyers will be assisted in the purchase of their first home. And that concludes my presentation.
Commissioner Bassoon, you have a question?
No, I was just going to make a comment. I highly support the first-time home buyer program, being a first-time home buyer myself. Wonderful presentation.
Thank you. One thing that you said in your presentation is that we were going to be helping 26 low-income family members, but the report says we're going to be helping 26 medium-income buyers. And would you explain the difference?
Low income is 80% and below. The home funds are required at 80%. And the only funds we have, and if I said median, then I made them in error. And that was up to 100%. That would have been an error. But it is low income, 80%. Home funds can only be used at 80% and below.
Typically, on the ones that we've been doing, say, recently, what has that average been? Has it been up to the 80%, or has it typically, more recently, been lower than the 80% in terms of our actual home buyers?
Our average home buyers are in the 70% range. They are on the higher end of the range. As housing prices go up, they'll be closer to the 100% range, 80% range.
And how do we broadcast the fact that these funds are available?
Well, we have it on our website. The funds are available. We are communicating constantly with our lending partners. And our program has been around since 1992. So there are a lot of realtors know of our program. And actually, because it is so popular and we're so well known, again, we've already spent all of our home money that we had allocated for this year, and we've spent all our inclusionary housing, because I think last month we came to you to get another award of inclusionary. So it's a very popular program. This year we have, not including this new allocation, we have almost $6.9 million in home buyer funds, and right now we only have a little over $2.5 million to hold us over for this year and into the beginning of next year.
Any thoughts?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Commissioner Tessa?
I'm sorry, I didn't see the light.
Thank you. Given the demand, it sounds like we have quite a bit of demand, more than what the funds that are available for the program. Give us an idea on the criteria you use, other than the income levels. That's obvious. But how do you select, you know, how do you select what, who's going to be able to take advantage of this program?
Our program is on a first-come, first-served basis. We do have established policies, underwriting guidelines. So they first, all of our buyers work through one of our participating lenders that have gone through 3-hour trainings, how to underwrite and package the loans, how to determine eligibility for our buyers. And they have to approve the loans before they come to us, actually. So again, it's on a first-come, first-served basis until we get near the end, and then we'll let them reserve if we're running out of money for the program.
And can any lender come in and get qualified to participate?
Yes. Well, it's a $400 right now annual fee for the company to participate, and then the lenders, individual underwriters, loan officers that work for the companies, yes, but they are required to get a certification and come to a 3-hour training that we hold usually 2 times a year, and we like them to come at least every 2 years, but we do post updates and everything on our website when things are changed. We also do mass mailings to let them know of any changes to our programs.
Commissioners?
Yeah, I've got a quick question, Vicki. A homeowner that needs rehabilitation on a new driveway, how is that working now for a loan? And how long do they have to live in the house before that is forgiven?
That was under our neighborhood stabilization program that we had the rehabilitation connected with our first-time homebuyer program. This money does not actually have that. And these homebuyers actually would have to wait probably a few years before they could do rehab, because in most cases, there's only a 3% equity base in the property, and that's not sufficient for a rehab to go on it. But in order to get our money under the first-time homebuyer program, the house has to meet housing quality standards. So it has to be in a good livable condition at that time, and we do have them get full home inspections for the properties, too. So we don't have any under this program that come in that are in disrepair, that they couldn't live in the property.
And because between their 3% and our up to 17%, the buyers end up not having to worry about mortgage insurance. Isn't that correct?
That's why we created the program like that.
Right. So that helps a lot in terms of their loan qualifying. Okay. Commissioners, we have a recommendation in front of us. Do we want to do anything with this?
Move for approval for item 103.
Commissioner Basir has moved approval of the recommendation by staff. Is there a second? Commissioner Tessin has seconded the motion. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of approving item 103 as presented by staff, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Looks like item 104.
Should I wait?
That's okay, Jeff.
We understand that you're anxious to move forward.
I am.
I'm excited about what you're going to present to us.
We understand that, so please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairman Gramling. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Jeff Davis, Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer, and with me is Suket Dayal, who is the Director of Strategy. I'd also like to point out behind me Jessica Adamo. Please raise your hand, Jessica. She is our project manager in the NGW team. June 19, 2009, we came before the board with the agency's first moving to work plan for fiscal year 2010. Today, we are before you to introduce the initiatives that we plan to include in our FY 2015 NGW plan. As is indicated earlier, much has been accomplished with our NGW designation as an agency, and we are very proud how far we have come together.
We've implemented dozens of innovative initiatives that have increased housing choices and opportunities for low-income families in our community. We've streamlined processes, and now we operate a smarter and more practical program for our participants. We have also created incentives that encourage our families who are on our program and are able to work to become more self-reliant. Today's workshop primarily will be to introduce you to three new NGW initiatives that we would like to include in our 2015 plan and will be bringing to you next month for approval. We also know we'll be providing a very short overview of some of the progress that we've achieved as an NGW agency. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Suket, who will provide a presentation.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we look forward to your comments on our proposed FY2015 NGW annual plan. I want to start off with a quick agenda. We're going to first off talk about the overview of the Moving Forward program, and then we follow with an update of some of our initiatives. We have 35 initiatives. I'd love to talk about all of them, but I know best interest of time will restrict it to 5. We'll then discuss our proposed initiatives for FY2015. We have 3 proposed initiatives for FY2015. For questions and comments, please feel free to stop us at any time and ask your questions. We'll also have time at the end for questions, additional comments. So, the Moving Forward Demonstration Program was first authorized by Congress in 1996, and it allows participating agencies to waive certain federal regulations and design and test locally designed strategies that meet 3 important statutory objectives. The first one is utilizing federal dollars more efficiently. The second is helping our residents find employment and become self-sufficient. And last, to increase housing choices for our families. Now, on 14th January 2009, we were reinstated as a Moving Forward agency. It is a coveted designation, and it gives us the ability to be creative. On a national level, they're trying to rebrand the program as America's Housing Policy Lab to reflect our innovation and our creative solutions. Locally, we've named our program Moving Forward, because we believe it truly captures the essence of what we're trying to accomplish with our designation. So with that, I'd like to highlight a few of our initiatives, followed by our statutory objectives. So the first one we have is increasing housing choice. And I'd like to talk about 2 of our initiatives, our sponsor-based housing vouchers for the homeless and our choice communities. This is, the sponsor-based housing model is a housing-first model. So we provide the housing, and then services are wrapped around it, so it's called Housing First. We have 358 vouchers currently allocated for our sponsor-based subsidy program, and this program provides more flexibility that helps to serve our homeless population. The building we have pictured out there is Parker Pier. It's a beautiful development, and we actually have 11 sponsor-based subsidies currently at Parker Pier. The next initiative I'd like to talk about is our Choice Communities. Choice Communities was first provided in our 2010 MPW plan. And what it does is it empowers families to move into areas of opportunities. So these are regions with better schools, access to better transportation, access to jobs. And by increasing the payment standards in the low-poverty neighborhoods, we've been able to attract landlords and offer better opportunities to our families. We currently have 200 families that have moved to Choice Communities because of this initiative. Moving along, we'll talk about the objective of increasing our families' self-reliance. I think one of the first initiatives that we had was the Achievement Academy, and it demonstrates our commitment to our families to help them succeed. Achievement Academy is 9,600 square feet, state-of-the-art resource and skill center. This is offered to no charge to our families. We service 3 core areas. The first is employment placement and career improvement. The second is financial education and coaching. And the third is access to income supports. The Achievement Academy is a critical part of our Path to Success model. We're providing the families the opportunity to work with 6 wonderful workforce readiness specialists, which work with them one-on-one. They develop a game plan for our families, and it really is a win-win for us as an agency and our families. The next initiative we have out here is our family self-sufficiency. I'd like to talk about that. This is a 2-year program. Again, families work with the Achievement Academy. There's a 2-year extension option. And it's an added bonus for our families because it rewards them as they achieve milestones. The picture we have up there is an orientation session. And I'd like to share a quick story. I was at one of the orientation sessions, and there was a lady in the front row, and as soon as we started talking about FSS, and we showed the grid, which basically shows the different options our families have to earn more dollars, she took out her cell phone and took a picture of the grid. She was really excited to see that it's not just a traditional FSS program, I now have more opportunities. And that's the kind of excitement that we need. That's the kind of excitement that we love to see when our families look forward to the initiatives and take well to the initiatives that we were proposing them. I'd like to give some examples of what those merits, if you want to call it, are. For example, if a participant obtains a part-time employment with a six-month retention, they get an additional credit for that. If they're no longer receiving cash aid assistance, they get a credit for that. Again, this is an additional credit that they get besides their regular escrow dollars that they save. And the last update I'd like to provide is on our Path to Success initiative. Path to Success is a unique initiative to San Diego. We started implementation of Path to Success on July 1st, 2013, so the data that we have for you is kind of at the halfway point. It was pulled on January 1st, 2014. We have 7,952 families that are now on Path to Success. 701 families are on the minimum rent. We did have a hardship clause. We do have a hardship clause for our Path to Success families, and 47 hardships have been approved. Now, these families are approved on the hardship, but again, the requirement is that they work with the Achievement Academy. So it is a process that we work with them, we help them, we set up a game plan for them to improve the quality of their lives.
Quick question.
Yes.
Is the Academy still providing for mock employment interviews, and are they also providing the business attire for the men and women when they do go on these interviews? Is that still in effect?
Thank you for the question. Yes, it is. Both are. We have a dress for success for men and for women, and we do provide mock interviews. We do record those interviews, and then we go over our families and say, you know, these are things that you may want to improve on and provide guidance on.
I had a question as well.
Go ahead.
Regarding the self-sufficiency program, you mentioned the two-year program and the possible two-year extension. What actually qualifies for that two-year extension? The reason why I say that is because I myself was in the program, and I had more than 2 years, which helped me so much in order to obtain the funds needed to buy my first home and to come and to provide a healthy down payment for my first home. And so I'm asking on behalf of those that are in the program now, they may need more than 2 years.
Thank you for the question. So what qualifies right now is if they demonstrate reasoning as to why they could not achieve their goal in the 2 years. So your example that you gave would be an example where they need more time to buy the house. That would be an approval for something like that. Or if there were some unfortunate circumstances that they could not focus on the employment opportunities that they were working towards and their goals that they've identified. That would fall back for the same thing as well.
And if I could add to that, because the additional option was added because of your concerns a few years back, and really what it comes down to in a nutshell is if there is engagement, if the family is still engaged, then they will continue to have that option to continue their participation in the program.
Thank you.
Commissioner Tessa, if you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dahl. These are impressive programs and services that we offer. Tell us about how you execute these. Do we do this all in-house? Do we do it with third parties? You know, how is it that we actually implement these?
So the Achievement Academy is a combination. A lot of it is done in-house. We have 6 workforce readiness specialists that work one-on-one with our families. Those are all in-house. They've developed partnerships with outside agencies. And so a lot of the work is kind of shared with outside agencies as well. We have on-site job recruitments. Again, that is with partnership with outside agencies. That is something which is unique because traditionally there'll be job fairs at other places and you're kind of telling our families to go there. Under the direction of Stephanie, we've changed a lot. We've changed our focus a lot in the Achievement Academy. So we are offering a lot of services on-site with partnerships. And we're also doing a lot of the work in-house as well.
I'm delighted to hear that, because there are nonprofits, and Jeff, I think we've communicated over the last 12 months or so, that are in the space offering these kinds of services. And so we should look for those kinds of synergies with those nonprofits out there that can augment, you know, the programs that we're trying to offer.
Absolutely, and we've heard you loud and clear. I think you'd be very impressed to find out what Stephanie Murphy has been doing over the course of the last 6 months, 2 years, for just that, bringing in new partners. And in the next few months, I think we'd like to do a workshop for you to see some of the progress that we've made in the Academy, and just the many, too many to number, partnerships that we have down there constantly coming in and helping us with what we're trying to achieve.
So next we'd like to talk about our three new initiatives that we have for our FY 2015 plan. The first one is expand the project-based housing program. The second is eliminate the 40% rent burden requirement. And the third is enhance the family self-sufficiency program. So we'll start with expand the project-based housing program. Now this initiative was first approved in our FY 2010 plan, and we wanted to expand some of the flexibilities to increase the housing choice for our families. So I'd like to talk about one of the flexibilities we're requesting for, which is improving an exceptional payment standard. Again, this would be based on rent reasonableness. Now, this is common for large cities of our size, where we have pockets of neighborhood where a higher rent is justified. In a traditional program, we'd have to send a request to HUD, and then HUD would conduct their analysis. That takes time, and we do not want to miss out on a good opportunity. So what we're proposing is we're basing the rent on the research done by our own inspection team through the rent reasonableness process. The second is we're requesting the provision for supportive services as a requirement in our project-based development. The last year, our project-based development was focused on our homeless families. And again, same concept of wraparound services, where we provide you the housing, we wrap around the services. What we want to do is we want to make sure that those families are taking full advantage of the services. So that's another flexibility that we're requesting for, is the fact that the supportive services are required in the project-based housing development. The impact for this is, of course, to increase housing choice for our families. Any questions on this one? The next initiative is eliminate the 40% rent burden requirement. So the Housing Choice Voucher Program limits the rent burden at initial lease up to 40% of adjusted monthly income. Now, this rent imposed on the HCV families sometimes becomes, on the Housing Choice Voucher families, I'm sorry, sometimes becomes a little troublesome and prohibits families from choosing units that meet their requirements but might be a little tad over the threshold. Families have different reasons why they may choose a unit like that. We've seen in choice communities where they're choosing a unit and they're paying a little bit more, but they're paying that because they have access to transportation or it's a better school district. What this flexibility will allow us to do is waive that requirement. We will still continue to educate the family and advise them as to what the percentage is that they're going to be paying in rent, but it eliminates that initial lease-up and shortens the time and simplifies the search for the families to find a unit. Again, the objective for this is to increase choice for our families.
But when you say that you were wanting to eliminate the 40%, How high is high?
Our job will be to educate them. We're not setting a cap on how high is high, because again, every family comes with a different circumstances. But our job is to educate them that 40% is what HUD regulations are. If you choose to rent a unit that's 41, 42, or 50%, we just want to educate you that this is what you're doing, so they make an informed decision.
In making those choices, though, we're also agreeing then that the amount of income that they have to pay for their other living expenses for that month are decreased. How do we make sure that we're not getting them to a spot where their standard of living truly suffers because they wanted to move to this other neighborhood?
Correct. So a lot of that we hope to discuss with them when we give them the percentage and we say, hey, look, you're at 51% or 52%. We do not recommend this because it might be a burden to you because of these reasons. When we collect information from our families, we do collect information as to who's paying for the utilities, So we do have a lot of information that we have in hand, which we can then use to advise our clients.
Commissioner Tusk?
Mr. Chairman, you're on to a good point there, and that is, how are we going to, what kind of curbs, I understand why you're requesting this, right? What kind of safeguards are you going to put in place to where we don't set folks up for failure?
There are two ways to look at it. The first one is we are holding our families a little more accountable, and we're doing this from the start by kind of discussing with them, these are your options, this is the decision that you're making. We want to ensure that you realize the decision that you're making. It also gives us a chance to talk about the Human Academy and kind of say, okay, this is the decision you're making. These are the ways that you can increase your income as well. So it's kind of like a twofold approach where we can advise them that perhaps this is not the best unit for you, but at the same time, we'd like to also encourage you to work with the Human Academy. If you choose to live in this unit, you may need more income.
So that's great. Do we get them to acknowledge it with signature that we've gone over this with you and here's the services that we can provide to help you, but you acknowledge that this may be a bit of a greater burden on you?
Yes, so that will be part of the planning process, but that is definitely something which we are going to include in our planning process, where the family does sign a document acknowledging that they are paying a higher percentage than what is recommended, and it is a decision that they're making.
Mr.
Gentry?
I think that the board discussion is a good reflection of one of the basic tensions in this business, and that is how much choice to give to a resident and how much protection to give. Protection can become straitjacket if it's too tight, and choice can become a setup if it's too loose. And there was a phrase that Suket used early in this presentation that I think South Africa will hear, and that is moving to work is America's housing policy lab. So part of the reason for us being in this program is to test new ideas, see how they work. And if we see this one doesn't work and there's a problem with it, then we'll say someone back up. But I think that what we're trying to do, in the 42 years I've been in the business, the regs have tended to protect and therefore restrict and burden the residents. That, in that respect, I think too much. This provides measures of choice. And if we see that the choice does not work, we'll be the first to discover that this one just wasn't going to be tried and made a good idea. And I'll point out that each of the 30, there are 37 of the 39 original agencies still participating in this program. And each one is doing things a little bit different. So this is something that we can share. And then, if it doesn't work, we'll be the first to say so.
Well, even so, if we use this discretion and we counsel them and we allow them to go to, say, 50% of their income to provide for housing, and then we find that the standard of living that they're experiencing, the family is experiencing because of this, is dropped because they're giving up food resources and other resources, I don't think do we have the power to then reinforce or reinstate that 40%, make them have to relocate?
We actually, the 40% rule, as it is called, is really only done when a person moves into a unit. So we actually have hundreds, perhaps thousands of families who do pay more than 40% of their income because as they live at the unit, their rents continue to increase. So we have found that people can be successful in that way. And I just mentioned that the questions that you're asking are demonstrate a real understanding of the program. This is exactly the question that we ask internally about and struggled over. So but we did come to the decision that we would seek the approval and, as Rick said, demonstrate it and see how it goes. But, of course, we're here to hear your direction, and if your direction is otherwise, then we will change it.
Commissioner Simms? Just as a suggestion, Jeff, maybe a good idea to have, let's say, a family that's having difficulties or you feel
they're going to be overqualified for this. They get a second opinion. That is mandatory that they get a second opinion. I think that would help us stay away from lawsuits. I mean, we'd have a better defense if we required a second opinion from a separate entity and then have them give their answer back, see if it changed it. In other words, it's their choice, and they should have a choice. But we have to protect ourselves, too, with that level there of a second opinion. It always seems to have some good standings to it when it's done that way.
Thank you for that. The second opinion, do you have any ideas of where that would, who we would seek a second opinion from?
If possible, it'd be better to have from a second party. A second party, not from the agency. That way it'll be completely divorced from this agency, and it'll look at the same criteria that you went through with them and recommendation. This is going to be awfully hard for you. We do not recommend it. They go to that second opinion person, and if they get the same thing and choose that, so be it. That's their choice. So.
One thing I'm not sure that we've touched on is that this is also seen as an administrative streamlining process, so that not only is it simplifies the search for the household for the family, but it also simplifies the move process. One of the more complex parts of the move process is determining what that magic number is, and then the client needing to find a unit that fits under that magic number. And so if the direction is otherwise from the board on this initiative, I could see it being either raising the 40% to a certain number that is tolerable to the commissioners, but I wouldn't want to add any more administrative burden to the process that is already there.
I think what we're telling you is that we're concerned and that about the welfare of the families that we're serving, and that we want to make sure that you're aware of those concerns and that the system that you set up is going to be able to policing is the wrong word because it sounds harsh, but to monitor it and to be aware of circumstances so that inadvertently we don't create a poverty household out of a household that previously was making it. That's all. All right. Any more of your presentation?
One more.
Okay.
Almost there. The third initiative is to enhance the family self-sufficiency program. Now, as Rick mentioned, one of the best part about MPW is you get a chance to take a look at your initiatives and make changes. You get a chance to take a look at initiatives, look at best practices, and adapt those changes. After the implementation of PAP Success, one of the things we found was we had a lot of families where the head of household may not be interested in participating in FSS, but you have other household members that are work able and that are interested in participating in the FSS program. They make good candidates for our FSS program, and we need to approach this not only as just looking at the head of household, but more as a family. So what we're requesting permission for is to open the doors for other household members as well. So we, through this initiative, what we want to do is we'd like to expand the program by providing the opportunity to non-head of households to participate in our FSS program. Our new FSS program started July 1st, 2013. We already have 57 new FSS families. And pleased to announce we have 17 new job placements already from our FSS program. 9 of them are part-time and 8 of them are full-time. So we'd like to continue this successful program that we have and expand it to other families as well. And with that concludes my presentation.
Today was an information item, so that we could ask the types of questions that we have. There will be no action taken today. This will be presented to us, I believe, possibly addressing some of these questions that we raised next month?
Yes.
Okay, so there's no action today, but are there any additional questions or comments that any of you have as guidance for our staff? Well, Mr. Gentry?
Just for perspective's sake, Mr. Chairman, as Sukhet indicated when this presentation began, we have 30-some different initiatives.
35.
35, thank you. I can count that almost that high. We have 35 different initiatives. You heard just about three of them, reports and three new ones. The Move Into Work program is on our website. And I would encourage the board members, either current or new, if you'd like to get more information, feel free to contact us, and I think probably go through Jeff or Sukat would be appropriate. And we'd be glad to give you a fuller explanation before next month, because we've got more than just these six that were addressed today, and we've done some pretty good stuff in this thing. And I'll point out that this agency was one of the very first Move Into Work agencies back in the late 90s. Unfortunately, with that collapse, we resurrected it, reinstated it in 2009. Our first MGW plan was 09 to 2010. If I do say so, I think we've got one of the best in the country, if not the best, and we've got some excellent folks working on this, both from a policy standpoint and execution. We've been able to develop efficiencies, which will let us operate this program at a lower administrative expense. And I think it's a saner program that's provided better opportunities for growth for the families we serve, which is the reason we're here in the first place. So I commend it to you. Jeff, thank you and your folks for putting this together. But again, either new or existing board members, if you'd like more information, please contact one of these gentlemen. We're always too glad to sit down and work you through the whole thing.
Commissioner Sims, the last comment. HUD is still very favorable about allocating money to this program. They're moving to work. It's one of the top priorities on either side of the House. If you go to, it doesn't matter if it's Senate or the House of Representatives.
As Mr. Gentry mentioned earlier, we're happy to hear that the HUD Secretary has promised to expand or extend the contracts for most Moving Into Work agencies for another 10 years. So that's indicative of some support that we're really happy to have. The downside, I suppose, is that they're not offering it to any other housing authorities in the country this year. So there's pros and cons at this point.
Commissioner
Vassir. Yes, I just wanted to commend you on this great presentation, and I just wanted to also say that this program has been such a benefit to my family, and I would recommend that anyone that's receiving any type of voucher program or in the voucher program to please participate in the Family Self-Sufficiency Program.
Thank you, and we're really going to miss you.
Thank you.
One last thought on my part. I'm very much interested in making sure that as we expand this program, that we do a good job on actually trying to create 21st century job skills and offer that in cooperation with the local colleges or whatever, but what we're seeing in this society is that more and more of the lower paying jobs, the entry level jobs, are in the process of becoming roboticized, and we can make a big deal about McDonald's and whether or not they're paying people properly, but the reality is in 10 years there's going to be a whole lot fewer fry cooks out there because they're going to mechanize a lot of this. So we need to make sure that we're helping our clients, with job skills, and that those job skills are going to have an ongoing benefit and an ongoing need in our society. So please include that in your focus.
We will. Thank you.
Okay, I believe that that concludes that item. And I believe that actually concludes our public agenda at this time.